Welcome to another in a continuing series of Tecmatalk podcasts, where experts discuss manufacturing in Mexico and related topics.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Tecmatalk podcast. This is a continuing series of informational discussions with expertise that cover a wide range of topics that are related to manufacturing in Mexico and other issues that touch upon the subject. Today, we're very fortunate to have with us Jim Gitney. Jim is president and CEO of a consulting firm out of Los Angeles called Group 50. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing absolutely super, Steve. Thanks very much for having me on this podcast.
Well, you know, we know that you have a lot of information to offer that's going to be of interest to those that subscribe to these podcasts. One thing I'd like to ask, however, before we get on with the topic that we have under consideration today, could you give us a little background on yourself, your company, and whatever other items that you might think could be a good preface to what it is that we're going to discuss?
Sure, Steve, I'd be happy to. So I spent my career in corporate America working with companies like GE, Black & Decker, Sunbeam, Rainbird, and all of which who had very strong manufacturing bases in the United States. Early on in the 80s, we started exploring manufacturing product in China and other low-cost regions, and over the next 20 years, moved a tremendous amount of manufacturing product from the United States to Mexico and then on to China. And in essence, at one point in time, my career taught the Chinese how to make countertop appliances. So I've been involved in manufacturing, new product development, marketing, sales. I've worked at the C-suite, CEO, Chief Operating Officer in several companies. And that's my background. About 10 years ago, I started Group 50 Consulting. Group 50 is made up of people with experiences very similar to mine. We spent many years in corporate America and now consult with companies, providing them the opportunity to take advantage of our operating expertise, the things we would do again and wouldn't do again, and best practices from around the world.
Well, that's certainly quite an expansive viewpoint you bring to the discussion at hand. And what we're going to talk today about is manufacturing. And manufacturing has been the backbone of the American economy for years. And I know that one of the things, in addition to working with customers that want to go to Mexico, you do things that help them to make their manufacturing efforts effective. And basically, that'll be the crux of our discussion. But before we get into significant things that are tactilely aimed at doing manufacturing cost effectively, could you give us an overview of what current trends in manufacturing are in going on today in manufacturing and distribution?
Well, globally, manufacturing exists everywhere, as we well know. Over the last 20 years, there's been a concentration of manufacturing in China. And many of us have read in the various articles about manufacturing becoming such a smaller and smaller part of the economy in the United States. I've heard numbers as low as 15% of GDP. This is a trend that has been going on for the last 15, 20 years, as I had mentioned earlier. As China has continued to develop economically and as demand internally in China has grown significantly, we've seen a fairly significant increase in the costs of doing business in China. Wage rates tend to inflate between 15 and 20% per year. You have to go further and further inland into China in order to get back to the wage rates that we had become accustomed to as manufacturers. And of course, that significantly increases lead times and also the cost of transportation. But that's just China. What we're finding is that there are countries around the world who are beginning to specialize in very specific types of products and activities. China had primarily been manufacturing and assembly, some semiconductor. We see the woven material industry in terms of gray goods concentrating in the Pakistan region. We see IT concentrating in India. We see metals and metals fabrication concentrating in Thailand and Vietnam. And so what's happening is that countries are beginning, or regions are beginning to develop their areas of expertise. High-tech manufacturing, CNC machining, et cetera, is concentrated in the Eastern Europe, where you can get very, very high-quality machined products, still taking advantage of relatively low wages. So things continue to shift, and what's happening is, as a result of these concentrations and economic demands, we're seeing prices rise across all levels, to the point where Mexico is now within striking distance of being at parity with some of these former low-cost regions.
You know, we see that the information that we've reviewed is that while Chinese wages over the last several years have been rising on average at about 20%, Mexico's been pretty flat. And it's funny, it's particularly talking to electronics manufacturers that we have contact with, what they're telling me that today that items that were produced at cost advantage in China, you know, just 4, 5, or 6 years ago today, you know, once you add all of the additional costs that it requires to get something from China to the United States, that, you know, they'll come in with a something manufactured in Mexico that's similar that might just be, you know, 5% difference. So, like you
to
said,
tell you, Steve, that's a great point to tell you how much it's changed. When I was manufacturing, when I was running manufacturing for Black & Decker's appliance division in the mid-90s, we could land a completed toaster oven, complete, packaged everything, for less than it cost us to buy the raw materials to manufacture it in the United States. We were seeing 40, yeah, we were seeing 40, 50% differentials in cost. Now, the other trend that's occurring is that companies are beginning to, and there's still some stalwarts out there who believe that effectively acquiring product means it only focuses on the difference between the cost per unit in terms of I bought it today for a dollar, tomorrow I can buy it for 98 cents. That's a cost reduction. Many companies, and the work we do is to work with companies to focus on the total cost of ownership. And we've developed proprietary models around that. But we look for the total cost of ownership, which touches on some of the things you had mentioned. You know, the cost of capital for having incremental inventory, the amount of working capital that you've tied up in inventory that you could be using for designing and implementing new products in the marketplace, lead time, resource requirements in the Far East or wherever you're sourcing this product from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when we look at that model, we see that in studies we did last year for several clients, we've confirmed what you've just said, that from a total cost of ownership perspective, that differential is only 6 or 7 points now in Mexico, and only in several places in the United States, only about 10 additional points. And so if you start thinking about that, that starts to add up to some real dollars and provides an opportunity for companies to manufacture and distribute their product closer to the point of consumption. And that has a whole bunch of other benefits to the business that are difficult to put price tags around.
You know, it's interesting as I hear you speak, and as an addendum to the pre-podcast conversation we were having before we started, you sound a lot like Harry Moser with the Reshoring Initiative. Again, he's a gentleman out of Chicago, and we have a podcast that if anybody else, after listening to this particular one, wants to listen to more information on this particular topic, they can access it on our website. But I think that, you know, as we mentioned before, you and Harry might want to have a conversation because you speak the same language.
Yeah, and I plan on following up on that.
Yeah, you're talking about basically trends about cost structures, the ability to deliver to consumers, you know, that are closer to where their product was produced. And obviously, technologies are changing rapidly. In terms of product development, you want to get new things to market quicker. But, you know, all of these trends that exist, when you look at them in their aggregate, what are the implications that they hold for the future of manufacturing?
So I think for the perspective of North America, the future is that we're going to see a lot of manufacturing come back to the United States and Mexico. And, you know, I've always been one that believed that one of the reasons why we offshored so much stuff was because we weren't willing to do the hard work to be competitive or work as hard as we should to be competitive. And I'm really excited to see that trend where we are now competitive again and have the ability to bring product back and manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. Now, there are going to be industries that we're not going to be able to do it in. I'm not sure we'll ever see gray goods produced in the United States again. I'm not sure that we'll ever see clothing, the retail clothing that you might buy in a department store, manufactured in North America again. But when you get to products that have some bulk, that have some technology behind them, that change in terms of their design and feature set on a routine basis, I think we can expect that we'll see a lot of that product coming back. And you know, we see more and more car auto manufacturers bringing product to North America, both in the United States and Mexico, and they continue to do really well. So I think that's just one indication that if you do it right, you can be very, very successful.
Sure. And one other thing we always, from the point of view of the business that we do at Tecma, point out is that in a discussion like this, you know, it's not when items are reshored from a place like China specifically, or even other countries that you've mentioned, it really isn't a zero-sum game in terms of whether it goes back to Mexico or to the U.S. Now, if you look at the structure of the maquilador industry in Mexico, 90% of the material inputs that are used in the products that are made in Mexico come from the United States. So, you know, in essence, what happens is if something goes back from China to Mexico and is built in Mexico, the whole supply chain that supported the Chinese manufacturing, which was in the Far East, gets left behind, and a new North American supply chain takes its place, and typically 90% of that supply chain making that product is based in the U.S. So, you know, you have to look at it in regional terms. When things come back this way, whether it be China or whether it be, excuse me, when things come back this way, whether it be the U.S. or Mexico, it's a win, you know, for the whole continent, actually.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that when we work with companies to bring product back to the United States, that's a tactic. What we really need to do is work with companies and focus on what their supply chain strategies are. And when you think about supply chain strategy, it's not just where do I produce the product. It's where are my customers located? What's the lowest cost distribution model? What's the lowest cost manufacturing model? And where do I want to focus my efforts longer term in terms of servicing my customers? So, for example, one of the clients we're working with has the majority of a majority of their product shipped to the eastern United States, and they want to concentrate a big push into Europe. So moving manufacturing and supply chains to the El Paso corridor, El Paso Juarez corridor, makes a tremendous amount of sense economically. And we're talking about savings that are material to the company. We're not talking about a few thousand dollars. So what the work we do, and you know, in working with companies like Tecma, allow us to put together a longer term supply chain strategy that supports the corporate strategy. And so it's those, all of those pieces need to fit together. I mean, the idea of moving a product from China to Mexico is pretty simplistic, but just as easily can be a mistake if it isn't incorporated into the broader strategies for the whole business.
You know, it's funny, there's a word out there that you know, we've got all kinds of shorings, but I've seen this word pop up, and I'm not quite sure what it means, and maybe you can clarify it for me. I'm seeing a word pop up, next shoring. Can you give us a little idea of what the definition is of that? Because I'm sure that, you know, more and more that'll pop up in literature.
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, as consultants, we have a tendency to want to develop things that are proprietary and unique, and McKinsey wrote a report about next shoring, and it's basically the term they use to define the trend to move production and distribution closer to the points of consumption. Now, again, this goes back to my comment earlier about what your business strategy is, and what we have found today. You know, 25 years ago, we couldn't get complete products, countertop appliances, and many other products produced in 30 years ago, we couldn't get them produced complete in Mexico, and we couldn't get 20 years ago them produced complete in China. We had to teach manufacturing companies how to do that, how to make those products. And we started out by engaging the maquiladoras and other companies in Mexico to make components, just like we did, you know, 10 years later in China, and eventually they were capable of producing complete products. Today, manufacturers and distributors of product have a myriad of choices of places they can go to get complete products, because the general capability of manufacturing worldwide has evolved so much. Engineering, with all of its technology and the 3D modeling and all that, has made it so much easier to get product produced in other places. What McKinsey's talking about is, because you now have that flexibility in terms of where you can go to get product manufactured, it's now much more important that you focus from a strategic perspective where are you going to have it manufactured, what its cost is, and how do you make it as close to consumption as possible.
Okay, so that clarifies that. One thing that you alluded to, actually you said specifically, is that for years U.S. manufacturing hadn't been competitive, and there was a perhaps tendency to want to take things to lower cost places because the hard work of becoming competitive was not something that people wanted to do. With that being the case, can you please explain to me, you know, what made America more competitive compared to things that happened, let's say, 20 years ago? What has created this resurgence in competitiveness?
So it's primarily been driven by the increases in cost in China and other producing countries. Now, if we just look at labor rates, just strictly look at the, I'll give you an example, average cost per hour of labor in North Carolina is $11. the average cost of labor in Mexico is $2.40. And the average cost in China is something less than that. And it depends on what part of China you're in. But it could be $2. It could be $2.20. So if you just look strictly at labor, you're going to say, well, it's pretty clear to me where I want to, where I'm going to go. But labor has become such a small percentage of the cost of a product. 25 years ago, labor could be 30 or 40% because there was many, hand operations, long assembly lines, and those kinds of things. And, fast forward to today, where automation and design has, for all intents and purposes, made, on average, labor only 4 to 5, 6% of the cost of a product. As a matter of fact, in many cases, shipping, transportation, has become a higher percentage of cost than labor. When you see that happen, what ends up when that happens is that the labor differential becomes less of an issue. And so now it's a matter of how cost effectively can I get components shipped to a location, apply the little amount of labor that I need, and very quickly move it to a distribution center where I can very quickly ship it to customers. And when you have supply chains such as that between China and the United States, where oftentimes you're 60 days or so or more between the time a product is finished in China and it arrives in your distribution center, you lose a tremendous amount of flexibility and incur a tremendous amount of cost. So those are the components that are changing and making manufacturing in North America much more competitive again.
Oh, okay. Now there's a certain degree of complexity that's associated with this, and obviously, manufacturers are busy manufacturing, so they're on a production floor. They're thinking about how to make their plants run more smoothly, and they may not have the time, and that's where somebody like you and your company comes in, to be able to do the research that's required to find out how they can take advantage of the trends and the changes that you brought up during this discussion. But, for those that have the time to do some investigation, what should they be looking at in terms of taking advantage of the things that you've just got through enumerating?
So I'll answer the question two ways, Steve. One is that we work with clients and we'll help point them in the direction that those directions to provide them an opportunity to significantly reduce the amount of work they have to do on research and to not have to reinvent things. So that's one of the advantages of using a partner like Group 50 when you're studying the effectiveness of your supply chain and attempting to identify various strategies that will make it more cost effective. But what you're looking for is you're looking for a multitude of things. You're looking for cost, obviously. You're looking for reducing lead times. You're looking for, as a reduction, result of reducing lead times, you will be looking for a significant reduction in the amount of working capital required to support your supply chain. And you're looking for effective manufacturing partners like Tecma or OEM manufacturers who understand what your product is and have the ability to support you. And then you have to, the umbrella over that is the total cost. And those are the areas that you really need to, that manufacturers who are looking at redesigning their supply chain really need to focus on. And that's a fairly significant effort, because what happens is a lot of times chief operating officers, heads of operations and purchasing and manufacturing have a vested interest in the effort and the suppliers that they put in place. And it becomes really difficult to stand back and say, how do I rejigger this, tear it apart and reconstruct it, if you will. And so that's the last piece. They need to be able to, if a manufacturer is going to redesign their supply chain or look at this from a total cost perspective, they need to be able to pull themselves out of the fray and look at it like it was on a clean sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And like you say, sometimes it's hard to even know where to begin to be able to, quote unquote, deconstruct these things so that you can put them back together and reconfigure them in a way that's going to come out creating an environment where your cost is going to be more effective and competitive. You know, this discussion is one that is fascinating, and we could probably go on for quite a bit more time, but, you know, I think what you've been able to do very successfully here is to communicate to those listening what to keep in mind when they want to look at things and think about making changes. They're going to make their business more agile, more effective in both terms of cost and producing a better product. Now, if somebody who is listening to this, or if any of the folks that are listening to this, want to get a hold of you and you know, engage you with regard to this topic, how would they go about doing that?
So here's the offer I make to the listeners. They can call me in my office at 909-949-9083, Pacific Standard Time, or send me an email to jgitney, G-I-T-N-E-Y, at group50.com. And I will schedule some time with them, and I'll be more than happy to take a half an hour or so, just like we've done today, and talk with them about specifics, their specific need and specifics about their business, and help direct them in areas that they ought to focus their investigation.
Well, I think, you know, you'll get some takers on that offer, and I want to thank you for joining us today and wish you well in your efforts to help companies to achieve the things that you and I have spoke about briefly here.
Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I actually look forward to listening to this again myself, and we look forward to continuing to work closely with you and the Tecma Group.
Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate that, and we do share the sentiment, and you know, have a great day. You got a busy schedule and a full plate, and I hope all works out well.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Sign up to receive all Tecma content through social media and RSS feed. Visit www.tecma.com.